Chapter 17. The wind and rain raked across Gorm's face, stinging his red, raw skin. Spring on the plains of Aberyth brought a uniquely damp variety of misery. Bitter cold and biting rains swept down from the eastern ironbreakers. The weather chilled travelers to the bone, but still allowed enough of a thaw for the roads to become a soggy, dismal bog. The mud was thick enough to slow even the elven steeds. It sucked at their hooves as they plodded along through the rain, and their riders wore the vacant grimaces of a funeral procession.
"Are we going to set up camp soon?"
Bert shouted from the vicinity of Gorm's boots. The dwarf glanced down. The kobold was clinging to Patch's back, a thick clump of fur in each of his paws. Both rider and mount were dripping water, and they looked skeletal with their fur clinging to their wiry frames.
"I'd not camp in this muck," said Jin.
"The bannermen and refugees found a way," said the kobold,
jabbing a thumb over his shoulder. Behind them, the camps of heroes, soldiers, and civilians fleeing toward Andoran were marked by the sputtering cookfires.
"All the better to make for Hertzwood," said Gorm. "I don't want to cross paths with any of Handor's men."
"I don't think any of these soldiers care about trying to arrest us at this point," said Laruna.
"Aye, but I'm sure they'd like to have 6 horses, said Gorm. "Last thing we need is a bunch of bannermen deciding to kick off a career in banditry by robbing us."
"Not everyone on this road is going to turn to banditry," said Laruna.
"And not everybody on the road will return to Andoran either," said Heraldin.
"Us included," said Gorm. "We'll figure out where to go next once we find Thane and Caitha, but tonight we'll take shelter in Hertzwood." "Hertzwood? A field, a forest, whatever!" barked Bert. "I don't care where we stop, as long as we get there soon. It's more cold and damp than an ice hag's armpit out here."
"You could have ridden in me rucksack," Gorm told the kobold.
"I thought I'd like the independence of making my own way and carrying my weight."
Bert shook some of the water from his head, leaving his ears jutting out at odd angles.
"Turns out I was wrong."
"Fair enough," said Gorm,
"but it was your choice, and you ain't getting in and soaking me bags now." "It's not my fault," whined the kobold. "We never had a mount for me before. Now that the wizard got me one..."
"We found a dog," said Gorm.
"What did you think kobolds ride? Tiny ponies?" asked Bert. "My ancestors have been riding wolves for countless generations, and Patches here is practically a wolf."
Patches barked and wagged his tail at the mention of his name.
"He's a dog," said Gorm. "He's a wonder of sorcery," said Jin. "By all rights, he should be dead."
"The same could be said of most of your father's associates," said Heraldin.
"True," said the wizard, "but Patches isn't undead. He's in the prime of his life. It warrants further study."
"So long as you do it somewhere dry," grumbled the kobold.
"We'll be in Hertzwood soon enough," Gorm said. "We should see the lights of the town any minute."
That seemed to satisfy Bert, or at least quiet him, and Gorm surmised that was as close as anyone ever got to pleasing the kobold. They rode on for another half hour, willing their horses to trudge through the muck as the gloom darkened.
"Any minute now," Gorm said, peering into the murk. "We'll see those lights."
"We should have seen them by now," said Laruna, squinting into the darkness.
"Look," said Heraldin, pointing.
A patch of blackness was barely visible against the surrounding gloom, a dim skyline rising through the mist and rain. As the heroes drew closer, the buildings of Hertzwood took shape. It was quickly apparent the town gates were nothing more than a tangle of twisted iron and burnt timbers. Dark banners dangled from the ruined walls, painted with a strange shape. When they reached the walls, Laruna conjured flames to illuminate the strange heraldry. Gorm peered up at a recognizable silhouette emblazoned against the crimson fabric.
"Chargasvarda?"
"It looks like him." Laruna maneuvered her conjured light along the contours of the portrait.
"Especially since they wrote Char beneath it," said Bert,
pointing to Shadowkin glyphs beneath Char's face.
"But what would the Gasvarda be doing here?" Gorm asked.
"I'd say that's fairly obvious." Heraldin peered through the gate as he dismounted.
Gorm felt a pain in his chest.
"No, they wouldn't. I mean the Red Horde would, but not the Gisvarda tribe.
We can't be certain there's a difference anymore, Jin said softly.
We'll ask the locals what happened, said Gorm. There's got to be somebody left in town.
Haraldin peered down the street. There's some bodies left in there, but that's a bit different. The bard grunted as Gase nudged him in the ribs.
Come on, then, Gorm said.
Cautiously, the heroes made their way into the desolation. The streets were vacant, save for the crows feeding on the remains of a few bannermen. The buildings that still stood had broken doors and shattered windows. The entire city felt like a mausoleum for the ruined Heroes Guild office at its center.
I just can't imagine the Gisvarda attacking the guild like this, said Laruna.
I can't imagine anyone successfully overrunning a guild hall, said Jin. Gorm's stomach nodded at the idea.
Come on, he sighed. Let's get out of the rain. We can find somewhere safe and dry to sleep.
They're making camp in the guild hall.
Mortis clambered down the side of a ruined building to join the other assassins.
Good.
Gerald Flynn was glad for the darkness as he tried to maintain eye contact with the doppelganger. Mortis dropped to the ground.
I counted five, but the ranger could be scouting and... What?
Yar! Nothing!
Said Captain Jones, looking away.
No, seriously, what?
Demanded Mortis. He put his hands on his hips, prompting groans and winces from the other assassins. The doppelganger wore the form of a middle-aged halfling, and little else.
Can't you put on some clothes? Deathbloom asked, staring at a patch of sky above their heads. I didn't bring any outfits this size, snapped the doppelganger. Nobody said I'd be scouting ahead. I assumed that floating golem thing would do it.
The mechanical gazer, said Udina the Raven.
A nearby barrel jolted at the mention of the device, humming and chittering as iridescent light shone through its boards.
We can't be using that flying bilge rat if we don't want them to hear us coming, said Captain Jones.
Udina gave the barrel a kick and it fell silent.
All the sprites can't keep quiet with their targets this close, she said. Which brings us to the matter at hand, said Mr. Flynn. Fortune continues to smile upon us. We have stumbled upon a city with no witnesses, and given that Ingerson's party has arrived alone, tonight presents an unparalleled opportunity to complete our mission.
The assassins looked at each other with bloodthirsty grins. Weapons were drawn.
Arr! Let's get to it, then, said Captain Jones.
Ah, but first, if I may, let's run through the plan again.
Mr. Flynn set his satchel on the ground.
Mortis, watch where you're pointing that thing.
The doppelganger put away his spear with a muted, sorry. Flynn handed Mortis a bound parcel from his pack.
Now, if you'll go get changed and also dressed, we'll start with Udina. What is your role?
The Noctomancer sighed. I'll use a shadow step spell to get close fast and eliminate the party's bard, which seems a waste of my talents, frankly. I mean, just about anybody could assassinate a bard. And yet nobody has managed to yet, said Mr. Flynn. Don't underestimate Heraldin's Strummons. Next, Deathbloom.
Once the battle is joined, I'll set four of the war golems on the mages.
The Imperial assassin flashed a handful of throwing daggers.
I'll strike once they're distracted.
Good, said Flynn.
And Captain Jones.
Yar! Once we board them scurvy dogs, I'll
perhaps without the seafaring metaphors, interrupted Mr. Flynn.
I spent many a coin and many an hour working with my publicist on this personal brand, and I'll not throw it overboard for the likes of you, said Captain Jones.
Flynn rubbed his temples. Very well, just make it fast.
I'm to find the ranger and run her through, said the assassin, or at least duel the scurvy wench until Udina comes to help.
Be sure to check the outskirts of the camp, said a deep voice from behind them.
A tall, dark-skinned Imperial stepped into the alley, clad in dark leathers and wearing a crimson scarf over his face. She's not with them now, and we don't need her sniping from the surrounding buildings.
Indeed not, Mortis, said Mr. Flynn, smiling up at the likeness of Gaste. And your role?
I'll try to kill the bard before Udina. The weapons master will stop me. I'll keep him busy until Deathbloom can come and help me finish him off.
And do not forget to stay silent, said Mr. Flynn. One word, we'll give you away. And if any two heroes gang up on any one of us, this will not end well. And speaking of endings, what do we all do once the rest of our job is done?
Converge on Gorm Ingerson, the assassins chorused the well-rehearsed command.
Exactly. It will take all of us to end him, said Flynn.
Arr, but we save the final blow for you, right? Offered Captain Jones.
What? Said Flynn. You know, we all kind of weaken him bit by bit, and then you get to finish him off, said Udina.
We assumed that's what you wanted, added Mortis.
Now, you see, this is why clear communication is so important, said Mr. Flynn. If you have a chance to kill Gorm Ingerson, you take it. Don't hold back anything for anyone, least of all me. With any luck, the dwarf won't see me at all.
What, really? Said Deathbloom.
I thought you'd be fighting him once the battle joined, said Mortis.
And risk provoking a berserker into a battle rage? Of course not, said Flynn. Why do you think we brought the other 8 combat golems?
So what will ye be doing? Asked Captain Jones.
Don't worry, Captain. Flynn drew his crossbow and cocked it for effect. I'm sure I'll be of some use.
The other assassins didn't seem convinced.
If you say as much,
Deathbloom sounded reluctant. I mean, I suppose that would work, said Mortis, but you and the dwarf having a big rematch after he took your hand.
I guess I just assumed you'd be going for, you know, the poetic justice, said Udina.
Ah, no, said Mr. Flynn. We are paid killers, not storytellers. Our job is to be fast, efficient, and lethal. Justice is irrelevant, and there's nothing poetic about it.
Hand-scrawled verses and related notes flashed by Gorm's eyes as he flipped through the second book of Niln. The words on the pages blurred together, perhaps because of the dim light cast by the old lantern sitting next to him in the abandoned office, or perhaps because of the dampness gathering at the edges of his eyes.
"Give me something,"
he whispered to any god listening, mad or otherwise. Inger had raised young Gorm in a world of absolutes. Something in the dwarven soul values certainty above anything else. When Gorm left the clan home so many years ago, he had done so with a bag full of provisions, a purse full of gold, and a head full of convictions so deep they might as well have been engraved on the inside of his skull. Most of those beliefs dealt with who was good and who was bad. Time, knowledge, and experience had eroded most of Gorm's ideas and opinions. His interactions with the Gisvarda tribe had washed away the last vestiges of his old prejudices. After working with Xerthraka Gisvarda, Gorm had reached the happy conclusion that there were no inherently bad people, no monolithic group that could be described as uniformly evil. Now, staring at the ruins of Hertzwood through the windows of an abandoned guild hall, Gorm was confronted by the other side of that revelation. There were no good people, no innocent townsfolk to save. Today's victims were tomorrow's monsters. His heart ached for the people of Hertzwood, yet his head knew that by now the survivors of the raid were already filing quest paperwork in Aberyth. The next atrocity was already in motion, and it would prompt another, and another, and another. If there was a way out of the mad cycle of violence, Gorm couldn't see it. In desperation, he'd turned to Niln's scriptures for direction. They were uniformly unhelpful. He found himself reading the prophet Epath's second book. Even among the Almatran prophets, a famously ill-adjusted and inscrutable group, Epath managed to stand out as particularly obtuse. His second book somehow managed to be even more nonsensical than his first. She will not know what she still knows. She will not see what she can see. She speaks in riddles that we may dwell in the same darkness as she. In the margin next to the verse, Niln had scrawled a note with a fast, loose hand.
Destiny cannot be known, and so I cannot find my answers. Acept, chapter 4, verse 8.
I need answers. Gorm's voice was a hoarse whisper. I need help.
On a whim, he flipped to the passage of Acept's first book that Niln referenced in his note. The seventh hero descends and rises with a blade ancient and unbloodied. His wrath will smite the smoke and shadow,
yet he shall lament the lack of hot beverages.
There was another of Niln's rushed notes next to the passage.
I have nothing but the All-Mother's prophecies. Sehek, chapter 3, verse 17.
Useless, said Gorm.
He switched tactics and tried reading through the Book of Gerd. Gerd's writings were the most understandable to Gorm, mostly because Niln had left out vast swaths of the book when transcribing them. Entire passages were omitted, with a small footnote like, the next 14 verses describe the common features of spider anatomy, N, or herein Gerd discusses the politics of bakeries, N. Chapter 6 was omitted in its entirety, paraphrased with a concise remark, olives again, entire chapter, N. Unfortunately, even removing the most incomprehensible parts of Gerd's text didn't render the rest of his scriptures useful. Much of his remaining work consisted of commandments for the handling of ceremonial incense. A common theme was that acolytes shouldn't sneak behind the sacred altar to smoke it. Even Niln had apparently steered clear of Gerd's writing. Beyond the descriptions of his omissions, the high scribe had left just one note in the prophet's book. It was next to a passage in the 7th chapter that shifted suddenly from commandments on observing holy days into several depressing verses. In darkness all the people dwell, in endless night all light has flown, blindly they toil and rest, buy and sell, darkness is all they've ever known. Near the edge of the text, Niln had scrawled a hurried, insipid note, that is why you must carry a torch. The tome bounced off the far wall with a deep thud. Gorm waved a frustrated hand at the prone book. As far as he could see, Niln's scriptures were only useful for projectile therapy. He rested his head against the wall, breathing heavily. He hadn't fully caught his breath before remorse overcame him. The scriptures may have been unhelpful and full of nonsense, but that just reminded Gorm of the inept priest who wrote them.
I'm sorry, Niln, he muttered as he gathered the pages back up. It's just, the whole world's fallen apart, and the party feels on the edge of the same.
He wrapped the book in a neat parcel and tucked it into his rucksack.
I hoped there would be something in there, some teaching or anything, he muttered. I don't know how much more we can take. One more setback may be the end of it all.
Unfortunately, while the second book of Niln was woefully short on words of encouragement, the mathematical proofs of the philosopher-scientist Nove had much to say about the universe and its timing. Gorm, like many residents of the northern Friedlands, held on to an old folk belief that the manner in which an individual wakes up holds omens of what sort of day he or she could expect. Rising to the scent of baking bread was a sign someone dear was due to visit, while waking with a crick in the back meant that you were sure to meet an enemy, and a bobbinjay's song first thing in the morning was a sign that a good fortune would find you. Over Gorm's career, he had discovered several other varieties of such omens. Ravens cawing in the morning signaled that death was near. Regaining consciousness in a dungeon usually meant that some villain or another would soon divulge their nefarious plans. In later years, he'd found that waking up with a hangover was a sure sign that he'd be drinking that day and passing out that night. And then there were all the smaller horrors that only a professional hero endured in the morning. Monstrous slime dripping on the head, tentacles gripping at one's bedroll, a frantic goblin to the face, and so on. Yet in all his years he'd never encountered an ill omen as certain or forceful as a mechanical warrior smashing through the wall of his chambers. Dust and rubble fell around Gorm as he scrambled to his feet. Amid the smoke above him he could see a single glowing orb searching the abandoned office. The golem's eye shifted from golden to red when it fell upon Gorm, and a series of chimes sounded from somewhere within its metal chest.
"This is going to be a bad day," Gorm said to himself as he grabbed his axe.
With a heavy sigh, he darted left just as a huge blade cleaved his bedroll in two. The combat golem lurched through the wall in pursuit. It looked like a giant's suit of armor supported on four sturdy legs. One of the Centaurian Centurion's arms ended in a massive sword, the other bore a thick shield crackling with enchantments. Worst of all, it was followed by at least five duplicate golems, their cyclopean eyes glowing red as they spotted Gorm through the dust.
A really, really bad day, Gorm growled.
The craftsmanship and ingenuity of the golems were recognizable as Barty Fisser's work, and that meant that this was no random encounter. If Barty was sending golems, there was a lot of gold involved.
"Assassins!" Gorm shouted a warning as he ran down the narrow passage to the main chamber of the guild hall. "We've got assassins!"
"What tipped you off?"
screamed Heraldin from somewhere ahead. Gorm dove through the door to the main hall moments before the pursuing golems smashed through it in a cloud of splinters. The great hall was a battlefield, illuminated by spreading flames and occasional gouts of sorcery. Jin and Laruna fought back to back, surrounded by four of Barty's constructs. A lithe imperial woman in dark silks leapt among the feet of the golems, throwing daggers at the mages. Heraldin was locked in combat with a woman in dark purple robes. The bard threw down a glass grenade that exploded in a cloud of amber smoke, but the enemy Noctomancer conjured a gust of wind to send the choking smoke screen back in Heraldin's face, and followed it with a bolt of lightning. Geist darted by, pursued by Geist. The weapons master and his double were locked in a deadly dance, wielding blades, maces, and handy pieces of furniture. One of the Geists was clearly winning, but it was impossible to be sure which one it was.
"They've got a thrice-cursed doppelganger!" Gorm yelled.
He started to charge forward, but a sweep from a golem's blade forced him to dodge, and he quickly found himself cornered by a squad of Barty's soldiers. The warrior braced himself. Deep breaths. That was the key. For a berserker, the secret to successfully losing control was controlling when you lost it. Battle rage wouldn't intimidate a golem, but it would inhibit Gorm's pattern recognition, and pattern recognition was everything when fighting constructs. The lead golem's head snapped forward. There was a flicker in its single eye orb. Its elbow wound back with a ratcheting sound, and then the pistons in its arms and torso gasped as it swung its blade. Gorm leapt out of the way. He could already hear the next golem's arm clicking into position for a strike. A couple more quick dodges, and he had the sequence. Snap, flicker, click, 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 jump. Gorm was in midair by the time the next golem's blade embedded itself in the guild hall's ancient floorboards. His legs were already pumping by the time his heavy boots clanked against the golem's armored forearm. Before the mechanical warrior could react, Gorm launched himself onto its shoulder and put his axe through the glass orb in the center of its mechanical head. There was a flash of light as the sprites within the orb winked out of existence. Gorm didn't pause. He dropped and slid down to hang from the reeling golem's shoulders just as the next construct's swing came. The blade passed through the air where Gorm had been a moment earlier, and then it passed through the distressed golem's head with a shriek of steel on iron. Sparks flashed in the darkness, a few of which fell near a bright red bladder prominently placed between the mechanical giant's shoulders.
"Bones!"
Gorm swore as he launched himself from the stricken golem. He danced off the head of the next centurion in line, but a swing of a third golem's shield knocked him off course and sent him flying across the room. His landing was a tumbling, skidding affair that nearly crushed a diminutive figure.
"Watch it!"
barked Bert from the safety of an overturned desk.
"Bert, what are you doing, lad?"
Gorm hollered, righting himself. Bert ducked as an errant spell seared the wall overhead.
"Hey, what did I tell you about the average life expectancy of a kobold in battle?" "Fine, make yourself useful then."
Gorm watched the remaining combat golems realign on him. There were still more than half a dozen standing.
"Go find help." "Oh, right. I'll just fetch someone, right?"
Bert's hackles rose.
"You lightlings all sound the same. Oh, laddie, someone's fallen and hurt themselves. Go find help, boy." "Get going,"
Gorm roared, bracing himself as the golems charged. Whether it was the tone of the dwarf's voice or the onrushing wall of steel and death, Bert leapt out the window with a yip just before the lead golem brought its giant blade slamming down onto the floor. Gorm leapt atop the golem again. A quick blow from his axe shattered the golem's glass eye before he vaulted off its shoulder, kicked off the next one's head, and leapt over the next two. He landed on the pauldron of the last golem in his path and let the momentum of his flight carry his axe through its eye.
"Ha!"
Gorm barked, launching himself into the air once more. Any satisfaction he took in the successful maneuver faded when he noticed that his trajectory was on a collision course with Heraldin. Just beyond the bard, the assassin's Noctomancer was weaving crackling strands of lightning and shadow. Sudden inspiration struck.
"Heraldin, get down!"
Adventuring in the wilds of Arth had a few hard and fast rules. always bring a rope, never split the party, don't trust dark pools in remote locations with suspiciously still water and a dearth of wildlife nearby, and when your companion yells get down, drop as fast as gravity will take you. A year on the road had conditioned Haraldin well. He flopped onto the floor without hesitation, much to the surprise of the Noctomancer attempting to assassinate him. She was likely even more surprised to see a flying dwarf sailing toward her, though it couldn't be said for certain, as she didn't even have time to scream. "Fancy meeting you here," the bard quipped, dusting himself off.
"This ain't the time for being clever," Gorm growled, shaking bits of mage off his boots.
He nodded at the pack of metal assassins trying to sort out how to maneuver around their blinded squadmates.
"Right, I've got it," said Haraldin, drawing a throwing dagger.
"No!" Gorm reached out, but it was too late to stop the flick of Haraldin's wrist. The dagger shot through the air, through the gap in the closest golem's shoulder blades, through the red membrane of bulbous bladder hanging out of its back. The golem was instantly engulfed in noxious, olive-colored gas.
"Get back!" Gorm roared, dragging the bard away from the billowing cloud. "Don't breathe it in!"
"What is it?"
choked Haraldin, his arm over his face.
"It's thrice-cursed poison you released with your bloody dagger!" snapped Gorm.
"Why would it have poison gas in its weak spot?" Haraldin asked incredulously.
"It ain't a weak spot," snapped Gorm. "It was a trap."
"Well, how was I to know?"
Haraldin jerked his arm away from Gorm's grip.
"By using your bloody head," snapped Gorm. "When an artificer finds a weak spot on a golem, they fix it or cover it in armor. They don't paint the bloody thing red unless it's a trap for thrice-cursed fools."
"Seriously?"
hollered Laruna. One of the golems surrounding the mages had been reduced to molten slag, but the remaining three pressed in menacingly.
"Are you seriously having this conversation right now?"
"It seemed relevant,"
Gorm shot back.
"It's not a matter of relevance."
Jin unleashed a ball of conjured lightning that narrowly missed the assassin darting through the golems.
"It's about prioritization."
"Help us," shouted Laruna, "or Geist."
Sudden inspiration lit up the bard's face.
"Or both.
What are you getting at? We still haven't escaped your last idea."
Gorm eyed the rolling green fog and the golems looming behind it. "Trust me." Haraldin drew a small folded slip of paper from one of his belt pouches. "Just get ready to help the mages." Gorm exhaled through his teeth and trained his sights on the darting assassin dancing atop the golems facing Jin and Laruna.
"Fine. Just do it quick. Them golems have almost sorted themselves out."
Haraldin nodded and readied himself. "Just say when."
"Now,"
barked Gorm. The bard flipped the slip open and looked at the rune inside. The creative destruction anti-magic rune flashed briefly. A gentle explosion emanated from the symbol like faint whispers in the fabric of reality. Gorm watched the world ripple behind the shockwave, leaving everything but the magic intact. Jin and Laruna's spells died in their hands. The light in the golem's eyes flickered out, and they froze in place. The construct's sudden stop was doubly unfortunate for the Imperial woman leaping between them. She sailed through the spot where a golem's shoulder should have been, and finding it empty, dropped to the floor. Gorm was waiting for her. There was a common adage that a successful assassin strikes first, strikes fast, and strikes hard. Perhaps it was professional pride, but it was left unspoken that assassins should avoid being struck back at all costs. Gorm had often found that those who carried a poison dagger often had a glass jaw as well. It only took one punch. The Imperial woman squealed as she flew through the air with much more force and considerably less grace than usual. Her head cracked against a stationary golem's leg, and she dropped twitching to the floor.
"Ha! That worked, lad!"
beamed Gorm, turning back to his companions. They didn't respond. Instead, they were all agape as they stared at the far corner of the room.
"What are you looking?"
Gorm dropped the sentence as his jaw fell open. The rune had forced the doppelganger fighting Geist to revert to its natural form, a lithe figure with ashen skin and a face that was featureless, save a pair of bulbous, dusk-colored eyes. It stood in bewilderment with Geist's signature black leather armor and crimson scarf dangling from its thin frame. Across from it, looking equally bewildered, stood another doppelganger, also draped in Geist's armor. Bert scuttled through the ruined town of Hertzwood, sticking to the back streets and alleys. The rain had subsided, and now the full moon peered from between the remnants of the clouds. This far from the battle in the guild hall, the town was eerily quiet.
"Hello? Can anybody help us?"
Bert's shout was more of a throaty whisper or a hushed yell. It was enough to give the pretense of searching for help without actually being heard.
"Help! We need help!"
It wasn't that the kobold didn't want to send aid to his companions. He did, but he also wanted to live to see the sun rise. Bert doubted anyone within earshot could help, but he was certain that a gang of bloodthirsty assassins had recently infiltrated the city. There was only so much one kobold could do. At least that was what he kept reminding himself.
"Nobody? Nobody wants to help?"
he said, ducking into a small alley filled with the debris of battle. There was no response. Given the circumstances, he had mixed feelings about this. There was a disproportionate amount of guilt in the mix, no matter how determinedly he convinced himself that he was doing all he could.
"Yeah, I didn't think so."
The kobold produced a cigarette from his vest and struck a match on a nearby stone wall. He leaned against the wall, took a long drag, and nearly choked to death as the entrance to the alleyway was suddenly eclipsed by a hairy figure.
"Bert?"
Thane stepped into the alley. In his arms, he cradled Katha, still in her filthy nightclothes, holding her bow and quiver as a sleeping child clings to a doll.
"What's wrong?"
The kobold dropped to his knees. He could only manage a barking cough as he tried to dislodge a lit cigarette from his throat.
"Ark! Urf!" "Is it Gorm and the others?"
asked Thane.
"Ark! Ack!"
Bert waved a paw toward the guild hall. The troll looked back over his shoulder, worried.
"Are they in trouble?"
asked Thane.
"Arf! Arg! Is there danger? Do they need help?"
The troll squatted down next to the kobold.
"Is that what you're trying to tell me?"
With a final cough, Bert spat the cigarette onto the cobblestones.
"Bleh! Gods, yes, they need help! Of course that's what I was trying to say! They've run into a team of assassins and murder golems! And also, I couldn't breathe, if anyone cares!"
Thane looked to the guild hall.
"All right," he said. "I'll go and help them. You watch over Katha."
"What?"
Bert danced out of the way as the troll gingerly laid the elf down amid the debris.
"What am I supposed to do?"
"Just keep her safe."
Thane smiled as the elf scowled and shifted at the touch of cool stone.
"I think she'll finally wake soon." "She's been asleep this whole time," said Bert. "Since I found her, yes," said Thane. "I've been worried, but she's stirred more lately. Watch over her until she wakes up."
"Well, yeah, but... I mean, there's assassins out there," said Bert. "I'm a handbag performer by trade, all right, and the average lifespan of a kobold soldier is one...
The kobold fell silent as Thane leaned down. Bert stared into the troll's giant, weary eyes. Eyes that said their owner hadn't had enough sleep lately. Eyes that didn't have time for excuses. A meaty finger pressed against the kobold's chest.
"Keep her safe," said Thane.
"Yeah," said Bert. "Yeah, okay."
Thane snorted and stood.
"I'll be back as soon as I can."
The kobold nodded, but as the troll turned, he called out,
"Hey, Thane!"
"Yes?"
"You ever, you know, get tired of saving them? Of being the one that has to fix everything from the background and still get none of the credit?"
The troll bared his fangs in a weary grin.
"It beats the alternative," he said.
"Yeah," said Bert. "I guess it does."
With that, Thane was away. Bert turned his attention to searching the debris around where the sleeping elf lay. He found an old kitchen knife amid the rubble that fit his paws like an oversized sword. With his new weapon resting easily on his shoulder, he clambered up to a perch on an overturned barrel and took up his watch.